Hey there, nursing community. It's two male nurses.
We are back, baby. It's two male nurses. It's your boys hollering at you one more time. It's two male nurses, and we're back, and we got a good one.
We're bringing the episode of how we both got into CRNA school on our first try.
Or your 10th try, if you're me.
Your 10th try, if you're Ben.
But we got it!
Either way, we're going over our story. Stay tuned. All right, and we're back with the first episode of maybe season three?
Now that we're season three.
Season trace.
Yeah, trace of this, two male nurses.
This is season trace of dose male nurses. We're coming at you. We're talking how we got into CRNA school. Now, this is just a personal story, really. We have a couple of other episodes possibly coming out regards to
How you yourself
and you can get into CRNA school. But right now we're just talking, this is our story, this is just how we did it. So let's just dive in.
Yeah, well, first we gotta mention the elephant in the room. And no, it's not Brendan Boyd. But the elephant in the room is that we have stepped away from the podcast for a while.
We did step away.
And maybe we'll cover what we've been doing in the meantime, you know, on a later episode. But it's been a while. And we're super excited to be bringing back more episodes. We've been getting a lot of feedback on our Instagram and email asking for more episodes. So here they are.
Here they are. This is how we got into CRNA school. So it's funny because when my sister and Andrew first started dating, got together, Andrew had mentioned... He was a new grad nurse. He'd mentioned like, hey, I want to do anesthesia. Like this was kind of a plan for me at some point. And I myself had also had aspirations of going to anesthesia school. And so
we started him on some vancomycin.
And I had red man syndrome. No, we looked at it. We knew it was like a goal of ours to do this. And so Andrew. I was actually travel nursing, and Andrew was already working at a surgical ICU. We'll get more into that. Really, you want to? He had the right ICU to work in. We'll say that it was the right ICU.
Right, and that's where this whole journey started. Was with the idea of it, and knowing that the first step to getting into CRNA school ultimately is getting into an ICU.
Right.
There are places that will consider ED experience. However, I mean, even like the AANA's like website says they want like adult or whatever, adult critical care experience, you know, vent management, titration of vasoactive agents, all that kind of stuff. And the best place truly to get that is in the ICU.
And Andrew was already in an ICU. I had reached out to me, said, dude, you got to come work in my ICU. I got a job there in December of 2019. First day on the job, basically January 1 started. We hit the ground running with our plan to get into CRNA school.
Yeah.
So what was the first stop we had to make, eh?
Dude, first stop was CCRN, which is something that I had pushed off, you know, because I'd already been an ICU nurse for like over, I guess about a year and a half at that point, right? All right. Yeah, probably about a year and a half. And I didn't feel ready, but you had been an ED nurse for a while, right? So you already had like the concept of what being a nurse is under your belt.
I had been an ER nurse at this point for about 3.5 years. And what I learned about that was that ER nursing knowledge, applying it to the CCRN, worthless. There was absolutely not one thing I learned from being an ER nurse that applied to critical care nursing from a textbook standpoint. I know plenty of my coworkers. I'll holler at them. You got Ashley Miller. You got Paige Dalkey, okay, who literally studied for the CCRN for a grand total of
three weeks.
Oh, yeah, no. For real, literally. Yeah, like, my kid was taking a nap, so I studied. And then when they woke up 5 minutes later, I stopped. They went, they took it, they passed. You know, just real big boys. Dude, for me, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, no, there were several other ICU nurses that were able to just like hop in there, look at a book, peruse a few pages, and go knock it out of the park. That was not the case for us. We felt like we had to start at like, you know, the bare minimum and get the books, crack every page, and really, really study them.
When we looked at research, it felt like we were going to see this material again. A couple of places that said, hey, really learn it. It's worth learning it. So we kind of looked at it as almost like interview prep, and we'll talk about that later.
Man.
It was kind of investment of just like getting a really good score. One of our friends had said, oh, this one school that you're going to be applying to, they want your copy of your score sheet. So it wasn't hates pass fails. Like, hey, how did you do on the test? It's scored. If I remember right, it was scored out of 120,
something like that.
Yeah. And did you get an 81 and barely pass, or did you get like 100 out of 120 and do really well? So we took it really seriously. I studied for the CCRN for about 4 months.
Yep.
Andrew was less, a little bit less.
Yeah, I had finished up my BSN while you were finishing that, and then as soon as I was done with that, I dove into studying for the CCRN, which is funny because I remember when Ben first started, I was like, dude, give me 2 days with you in the ICU orientation time, and I will teach you how to be an ICU nurse.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I thought like this flow stuff that I had figured out of like, oh, you got to make sure you check their sugar right before 7:30 so we can go get their insulin and bring it in with us for the first med pass, right? It was like, no, none of that had to do with it. And once we started studying for the CCRN, we're like, oh, this is what takes, you know, being a ICU nurse to a certified ICU nurse, of like understanding how like the vent is working, peak pressures, plats. What's a plat?
Right. What's a plat? I mean, what was that nurse you just talked to the other day who
told me peak pressures with like quotation marks, like it was a made up like number that the physician was going for.
The physician keeps talking about quote unquote peak pressures, you know, and then the physician said that and everybody laughs, yeah, you know, yeah, but right. Real things. And those are the things that we learned. I'd never heard of them. I'd never seen that. I remember reading for the CCRN, studying the book and not knowing what an impella, like they talked about an impella. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know why it was important. It was just a word on the page. Right. And so not having that ICU experience and not having seen these types of patients, I definitely I knew I had to put in more time, and that was just like kind of what I had to do.
Right.
So that was just our personal experience with it.
And it was incredibly fun too, with both of us like diving in and digging into this. We come in and we're like, dude, you have to check this out. This patient, this is happening. This is what we did. Look what happened, you know, and it worked. Like this is what we were just studying about. And it was really exciting.
It was. Well, now we're going to talk about the thing you shall not speak of.
What, dude, and honestly, the main reason why nobody goes down this path, it seems like, the GRE.
And it's funny that we're talking about how bad this is. We just mentioned an elephant in a room. He's a very buff elephant. He's our other brother-in-law. His name is Brendan Boyd. We'll call him out since he's actually listening, but he took the GRE, and he said he studied for a grand total of a month. So literally 4 weeks, and that's not every day, just like 4 weeks, he got a 315. Now, for you who have taken this test, 315 is a very, very, I mean, at 320, schools start giving you money to come to their school. You know, like that's what the scholarship,
it's competitive score.
It's such a high score. Most anesthesia schools say they want over a 300. There's a couple in Louisiana, a couple in Alabama that'll take a 290. We'll talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. But for us, GRE was the next step. I was doing CCRN from January until April, 4 months. The next 4 months was what we shall not speak of, the GRE. What was your experience with the GRE?
Oh, man. Worst test I had taken. It was awful. Also going to shout myself out here. I took it right at the end of my time when I had COVID, and it was like the brain fog and everything. It was like, ugh, it was a terrible all-day test, you know? But I felt like there was a lot of study material that helped really guide you through it. And it wasn't like me trying to guess, like, oh, I need to like go on these calculations or these, you know, equations or whatever. It was like, no, here, we're going to like lay it out for you. You do all these steps, do these practice tests, and you'll hope that you'll get a good score. Right. And that was kind of the idea of it.
100%. And it just, again, we're just telling our experience. But for me, and actually Andrew, I found out later, but I studied for the GRE every day. Except for Saturdays, I studied for the GRE every single morning before work. I'd get up at 4, I'd drive to work, and I'd sit in my car in the parking lot. Remember, you'd pull up and the light would be on in my car.
With your big whiteboard.
I had a big whiteboard because I was going to take the GRE online. I had a whiteboard, and I was just doing practice problems. I'd do practice problems from about 4:30 in the morning till 6:30 when work started. Perfect. And that was every day. Yeah. I did every day for 4 straight months.
Yeah,
I studied for the GRE for 4 months. I don't know how – I think Andrew – or did you say for the GRE for less too?
It was right around there, but then also I did have this end of COVID, and then also what we're going to talk about next with that science course, right? That would kind of intermixed with it for me.
So it's basically 4 months for both of us of just solid GRE. And it's funny because I remember thinking, like, I just, like, you know, you don't know what everybody else around you is going through, but later Cammy told me you were also were getting up at 4.
Oh, yeah.
Doing math problems, doing English, studying vocab words at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
My family kind of bullied me into taking a vacation that in the middle of the summer. And for a week, I went to Yellowstone with the aforementioned brother-in-law, B-Boyd. And whenever we were driving, we were doing vocab words. Mm-hmm. On that one trip, I memorized somewhere around 500 vocab words. I still remember it was the Kaplan 500. And if you give me my websites, I'll talk about like, oh, I know the Barron's 300. And then someone else will flex and be like, well, I know the Kaplan 500, you know. But that was what I used the Kaplan 500. We did the vocab words 4 straight months.
Yep.
GRE.
Yeah. And it led us to end up getting competitive enough scores for the places that we were graduating to, or sorry, that we were applying to. And we're going to discuss how you can do well in the GRE as well later on.
So, we'll throw our stats in here. On the CCRN, if I remember right, I got a 107 and Andrew got a 108.
Yeah, it was very.
I'm almost positive. I don't know if it was a 108 or 109, but I know Andrew beat me by 1 point.
Dude, but Ben got 100% correct on nephro. So he is the nephrologist.
Pretty much worthless. Apparently I'm really good. Yeah, that's worthless. It's not even cool. There's nothing cool about that. Andrew got all the like neuro and cardiac, so he's literally like the neurocardiologist.
No.
I am the kidney guy, which is worthless. But that was our score for stats. For everybody always wants to know, hey, what are your stats? I'll start. And then they, you know, they throw out their stats.
Yeah.
We got about 100 on the CCRN, and we both got about a 300 on the GRE.
Yeah, just north of the
300. We scored just over a 300. I think I scored a 307
Which
myself.
For a lot of schools is the minimum requirement to be just competitive, right? To like, you know, it's not going to be like, oh, he got a 304 versus a 305, right? It's like, hey, he got north of a 300. And other things match up.
We'll look at him. Yeah, so shooting for the 300. We were both shooting for a 300. We both got over a 300.
Yes.
That was another 4 months for me. So at this point, it is August, 4 months and then 4 months, and we dove into clutch. This was Hope Sajak, if I remember right. SRNA told us we should do this. She was the one who found it originally, I thought. She didn't do it.
But she was like, hey, there's this class that's out. So we started looking into it that is offered by Middle Tennessee School of Anesthesia in Nashville. And it is a kind of a pre-anesthesia class that that nurses can take, and it will go over kind of like a pathophysiology of, you know, human body, obviously, but with an emphasis of like how that incorporates into anesthesia. Fascinating class.
Awesome class.
Absolutely intimidating when we first started, which started in August, right? And then we dove, you know, head first into that. And that was the next thing where every morning, every evening, you know, every day off that we had, we were studying for this class.
Yeah.
Right. And putting our all into it. And it was an amazing class. And that was so that's what we started with next. And not every school requires that kind of a thing. Actually, no school says that they require it. They're all like, hey, if you want bonus points, taking any graduate level science courses, especially like a biochem, ochem, those kind of things. But this was like a specific like anesthesia focus class. And there's another school that offers a class like this too, I believe. Right?
There's a couple, yeah. We'll dive into those. But basically, for us, we did a graduate level pathophysiology science anesthesia type course. So we found one that we liked. It was MTSA, and we did it. That took about 4 months,
right?
Roughly 3.5. Starting in August, ended in December.
One semester,
and right. That was that last 4 months. We studied every day. I think we both got upper 90s in that class. We both got a very solid
Ben
A.
Ben got a 99%.
I did not. I definitely did not. But we got upper 90s. We got a solid A.
Yeah.
And that was like another just kind of a check mark on our list of things that we wanted to do.
Dude, is something we could throw in on the application that, like, you know, that hopefully not everyone else would have. It would help us stand out a little bit. And it would prove to the people that were intervene with, like, hey, they're capable of graduate level material, and specifically like anesthesia focused patho stuff, which was absolutely mind-blowing. And we loved taking that information and taking it back to the ICU, what we were doing and stuff, like
100%
learning how like propofol works and stuff. Acid base balances on a whole other level. It was just amazing,
fantastic class. So we would obviously we're not getting paid by MTSA, but we'll throw out there and say that the class, top notch. It was phenomenal.
So what's the price of the class? This was an investment, right? It was, we knew that like all the prep materials that we've been spending on and stuff, it was money that we were spending, but it was like, hey, we're just giving our all to get in this application cycle.
Right.
Right.
So we did the class, and you know, when you first get into this, I think just like everywhere else in life, I think people really overestimate, just in general, myself included, you know, ourselves included, overestimate really how cool you are, how smart you are, how good your application looks. You like look and you're like, yeah, I'm pretty good. I got this number. This is all pretty good. You got to realize that everybody out there, I mean, everybody going to anesthesia school has a 4.0. Yep. Everybody out there has
a 315.
Everybody out there has great hair and all their professors love them. Right. I mean, that's every human.
The best recommendations, CCRN.
Every single one.
Yes.
And we've heard people talk about like other friends of ours trying to get in and saying like, oh, they're really solid. They have a 3.3 science GPA and they took the GRN and it's a 295. I'm not worried about them at all. And it's like, it's very sweet to hear that you're being very supportive. But the other end, you got to realize that these are not competitive numbers.
Right.
And even having competitive numbers, you might need more.
Right.
So for us, here's what we focused on for more.
Yeah, just absolutely. Being more. Because we didn't have the absolute competitive numbers.
And even if you do, you still want a little edge.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody
has an edge. Everybody's got the edge. How do you get your own edge? How do you stick out?
Unit council.
Unit council.
And extracurricular stuff, right? Everybody mentions, oh, I was the president of the unit council. And
specifically, Clayton Boone. Clayton Boone... neuro nurse ICU extraordinaire, yeah. one of our mentors, really, when we were both in the ICU new, but Clayton J. Boone was leader of the unit council.
Dude, he already had the seat as president of the unit council.
Right. So he ended up leaving, and that was a whole other story, but Clayton Boone, unit council, we did the unit council. I actually had it on my resume.
Because you were part of it.
I was part of it.
But you weren't president.
I was just a member. Several of my coworkers claim I was the social chair. I was absolutely not. That's extremely uncool. And I found it also offensive.
The social chair.
I was not the social. I find it offensive. But
okay,
you get it on the unit council. It was an extra thing you can put on there.
Right. But you know what? Everybody's on the unit council.
Right. So how can you do it? Well, what more can you do?
On another unit council. Dude, so we actually went to our educator and manager being like, hey, what are some things that we can like kind of get involved with? And one thing, they're like, hey, I actually just got an email saying that we need trauma liaisons.
We need a trauma liaison
for the SICU to be incorporated for the trauma center, some certification to have that communication between the departments, right? And we took that.
We were trauma liaisons. It because of COVID, like there's
nothing.
Yeah, there turned out to be a different kind of route with that. But
couple of Zoom meetings.
Trauma liaisons.
Yeah,
we also have done a ton of mission trips.
Yeah, so we also done medical mission experience. Trips in the past, so you can put that on there.
Ton of volunteer, anything volunteer, soup kitchen, anything you can use is fine. We use mission trips.
And I'm gonna call Ben out, and this is one that he's pretty humble about. But Ben is a beast with an ultrasound and peripheral guided, ultrasound for a little bit better access on those hard sticks. He always did it when he was an ER nurse. He started a class that our ICU endorsed and had people go to that he taught, where he was teaching ultrasound guided peripheral IVs.
It was on the paper. It's true.
It's true. I'm not making this up.
Ultrasound guided access instructor.
Yeah.
And I had it on the paper.
Dude, so he had that on there. And that's like, when you're looking through it, it's like, hey, that's really unique. And would apply to what a CRNA will do, as far as using ultrasound and whatnot.
It's true. And I actually, this is not tooting my own horn at all. It was more just
toot.
I'm not going to toot my horn, but, but it was really nice. There was a couple of days ago at work, and I've actually seen this a few times, where people would call out saying they needed an ultrasound. And there was like three or four people on my unit who could do it. Specifically, I've seen him do a couple of them is Joe Phil. Hey, they need an ultrasound stick. They'd come over looking around. Oh, Joe Phil is right there. Joe Phil can knock it out. There was a couple months ago when Taylor Campbell was like, oh, I'll go up and take care of it.
Yep.
And so for me, that was like really, I don't want to say fulfilling, but it was like really nice. Just like all of a sudden, there's an ICU full of nurses that can like drop an ultrasound line. It's like very, very cool to me.
They're not calling the ER anymore.
We have a tough line. Call the ICU.
They're full of ultrasound trained nurses here. Yeah.
So yeah, I was very gratified. I was very humbled and blessed.
And I think something like that class. Perfect to put on there. And then also we're talking about, being a, I can't remember now, the CCRN, you get the Adult Critical Care Association membership.
ACN membership. So that was what we did. We just, having that extra step, finding that volunteer experience, other things for your resume to make you stand out is how we did it.
And the biggest extracurricular thing that we did was this podcast.
Oh, the podcast.
Which
yeah.
we were wanting yeah, yeah. to like be bringing out, you know, we were wanting to do something like this anyways. And we were like, hey, this is going to help us study for CCRN. This is going to help for interview prep. And this is also going to be something we can put on a resume.
Yeah, right? Honestly, it helped us more than anything.
I think, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just for learning the content, learning to talk about the content and stuff. That was like the biggest, you know, my favorite extracurricular things that we were able to put on there.
So that kind of our story right there. We did 4 months. For me, it was 4 months, 4 months, and 4 months. It was one solid year. It was 12 straight months of just being eating, sleeping, breathing, anesthesia. Anesthesia focus. I mean, because the GRE was nothing to do with anesthesia. Pretty worthless, honestly, from an anesthesia perspective. And then like the other two were total blasts. But just 12 straight months. It flew by.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how many people you talk to like, hey, are you thinking about doing, I really don't have time for that. I don't have the time for that right now. And it's like,
yeah, family trips that were like, nope, can't go on. Or like outings that were like, no, we're studying Saturday night. You know, those kind of things that we had to sacrifice. Because we knew, as we said, we want to get in this application cycle. So we're putting all of our eggs in the basket.
It's funny though, even, you know, we actually haven't talked about this, but I'm going to float it out to you, Andrew. Can you name any times that you were invited to something and you didn't go? Do you remember any of the parties that you missed?
Parties? Well, I remember this big golf party in Arizona that you and everybody else went to and rented razors without me.
Touche. So Andrew did miss one. I can't think of a single one. I know there were things that I said no to. I can't remember them right now.
Oh.
It's like a year later.
That one sticks deep, man.
Yeah, that was a family trip. Andrew did miss on that. Yeah. But for me, I literally, and so people are like, you just miss out on so much. I literally can't think of a single thing I missed out on. There was never a single thing of like, I really regret missing that time when we, you know, all the coworkers and I went and got hammered together. I literally can't think of a single, I don't remember.
Dude, and the thing that was so great, at least for me, calling out Ben on this one, he was such a motivation for this year of just hustling that a lot of the times we're like hanging out at coffee shops, studying together, and we're always having a good time. You know, we're like, you know, going back and forth like, hey, look at this concept. We're studying for this class, quizzing each other. And that's what like really made the year go by. And it was fun having a buddy to go through all this with.
Yeah.
Made a big difference for me.
So for us, at the end of January or December, in December, everything closed and the cycle opened up for the schools we were looking at.
Yeah.
We both were looking at a couple of schools and we applied.
Yeah. And that was the next step, man.
And that was the next step, was just hoping for applying and while you're waiting, doing interview prep.
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, that application cycles are so important to be aware of. Like, hey, I know I want these schools, and they open up January 1st or December, whatever. You got to have all of this done in time for that, right? Because you don't want those cycles to open up, and you'd be like, oh, scrambling to take the GRE, and you're not happy with your score, trying to retest it and everything. Take your time, you know, plan that out, and just be really intentional about it. Be ready for those application cycles to open.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was kind of our journey.
Well, one other thing. And we both got accepted.
Oh, right. We both got accepted. We both did get accepted. So Andrew got accepted to a school. It was, we can touch on it. It was very, very, well, for me specifically, it was very, very heartbreaking. The school that Andrew got accepted to, I didn't even get an interview to. They told me I didn't have enough ICU experience. And so, it was really, really tough pill to swallow.
It was really tough.
Andrew and I
were both really bummed.
Had already talked about, like, hey, if one of us gets in, you have to take it. There's no questions asked. We're not waiting for the other guy. Our dream was to go to school together, obviously. Right. It goes without saying. But
so we can be two male CRNAs or SRNAs.
Two male SRNAs. But we agreed 100%, regardless of where you get in, if somebody gets in, you're taking it. Yeah. So Andrew got into a school and I didn't even get an interview. I was very, very disappointed.
I still think it was a misunderstanding and a fluke. Just throwing it out there. Their loss and my loss.
No, but, it was almost, we both had these two schools that we loved. We loved both of these schools. We honestly had discussed it. We weren't even positive which one we liked more. If I remember right, I remember that one hike we took. We were talking about like, man, this one sounds so good though. Yes, but our number one choice is this, whatever, whatever. Andrew got into that one. And 3 or 4 months later, by the grace of God, I believe I got into the other one. So our top two choices, Andrew got into one, I got into the other, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah, and we both have the same start date, end date.
Same start date, everything. We both start this January SRNAs.
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
Yeah. It's exciting, man. It was all this hard work. And honestly, this, I feel like, you know, this, you know, podcast has had like so much momentum behind it for this point. And I'm just so excited.
Oh, me too.
Genuinely excited.
So now the two male nurses we're talking here, we have just now told you how we got onto CRNA school on our first/10th try. The next episode, we're going to tell you
how you can get into CRNA school on your first try,
or potentially on your 10th try if you want to be like Ben. if you consider me a role model, wait till the 10th one. We'll dive more into that later.
But we have a process that we figured out that will be essentially a shoe-in if you follow this process, in our opinion,
guaranteed CRNA school on your first try. I truly believe that. This is the steps we followed. We did it. We are not 4.0 dollar graduates. We are not 5-star recruits. We are not.
Ben is incredibly handsome, so I mean, he has that going for him.
That's debatable. And a really, really big nose, if we're being serious. I know you guys can't see us. I have a huge schnoz.
All the interviews are on Zoom, you know.
True, thank goodness.
Yeah.
We'll tell you how to get into CRNA school on your first try in the next episode.
So stay tuned. Two male nurses signing off. But not for the last time. We're coming back. We'll bring them back.
We're coming back.